This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Siviso. In our Health and Living segment today, we're going to be discussing dubious treatments when it comes to your eyesight. Now, would you risk your vision for something that is touted as cheap and attractive? Well, sometimes there is great temptation, but many eye treatments and procedures sometimes also promise quick and painless cure. But are they actually effective, or, you know, could they even cause more damage? In the studio with me to help us understand this, Dr. Ken Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ken. How are you today?
Thanks, Mira. Glad to be back.
You have been a busy man join us on this show.
Thank you.
So it's great to have you back. You know, you feel very strongly about this topic, about the various types of treatment which, you know, are cheap, supposedly effective because of advertising and all of that. And then I'm sure you see the brunt of these sort of treatments, not so credible in a way. Why do you feel so strongly about it?
Well, the main thing is really it's the harm caused to patients, because they would stop using their normal treatments and then try the other, which not necessarily cheaper. They're actually more expensive sometimes, but ineffective treatments. So a lot of these products are sold online through Facebook or social media or WhatsApp, and they're not regulated, and a lot of patients are then persuaded by their friends or relatives to try these treatments for their eye problems.
Which eye conditions do you see most of this happening?
A lot of the time it's for glaucoma. It's a disease where the patients have to use eye drops daily to reduce eye pressure, and it can be a bit of a hassle. These eye drops can have side effects, red eyes, a bit sticky, sometimes uncomfortable to use, and they have to go back for a refill each time. So there is a gap here where the treatments are sometimes a bit of a hassle for the patients. Mm-hmm. So they can try other things.
But then again, also glaucoma gets progressively worse over time. Yeah. All you're doing is slowing down the progression?
Yeah, we are slowing down the progression. We're just trying to maintain their vision, stop it from getting worse.
Okay, so I suppose they feel like, you know, I have nothing much to lose if I try it. Is that generally how people feel about it?
Yeah.
And it's not as convenient?
No, it's not. Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of these dubious treatments sold online, they also claim to cure everything for the eye, from myopia, from cataract, from squints, from red eyes to glaucoma. So they're like a wonder treatment.
Right. So other sort of conditions? You mentioned glaucoma. Yep. Which ones? Which are some of the others?
Cataract, red eyes, myopia, which is kids wearing glasses.
Myopia is
short sight. You can't see far.
Okay.
So some of these treatments include spectacle frames or supplements you drink, or just even eye drops, which may contain nothing at all. And so we want to warn the public about it. And actually, to be fair, this has been ongoing for many years. So the society has been raising awareness all along. But every time we do a big publicity drive, this thing slows down for a while, then it comes back again.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think that's the case, though?
Well, it's a huge profit margin. I mean, these products are pretty much, you know, ineffective. So if you sell a bottle of drops for 100 ringgit, you make a lot of money.
Right. But then again, we know that these are unqualified professionals who are selling these things, or unqualified practitioners, right? But we still go for it. I mean, it's just not in the field of ophthalmology.
Well, because I think anything that's been labeled as herbal or natural, or it's very interesting, because the products are targeted for different markets. For example, products for the Muslim market will often use a religious connotation, and that's a very effective way to sell such products to that market. For the Chinese-speaking market, again, they use a lot of traditional Chinese products and make claims and things like that. And so it's a very segmented market, but they are very similar in the way they work.
But where do you think we're lacking? Is it in terms of enforcement, for an example?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure that the industry is very well regulated.
Not really. These herbal medications fall through a gap in the market. They're not considered drugs. They're more like supplements or natural treatments.
Or even food sometimes.
Yes. So, or spectacle frames, you know. So they really fall in a grey area. So really, the health ministry can't do much because their regulation isn't there. So really, it's really more the domestic trade or consumer affairs. So it's more really a trade issue rather than a health issue.
Okay. So they need, the two ministries need to talk to each other.
Yeah. But I think they've got many, many things on their plate.
I know. Yeah. But I think this goes across the medical field in general, diseases, other diseases as well, for cancer and everything
absolutely,
else.
Absolutely.
Everyone seems to be talking about the same things. But you said spectacle frames. Yeah. How bad can spectacle frames be? How wrong can you go? Yeah.
No, I think there's a specific type they claim to have special ions built into the frame that can cure everything under the sun. But, you know, of course, it doesn't work. And these can be very expensive. You know, so it's more a burn on your pocket than anything else.
Yeah. Okay. And when you talk about ophthalmology, a lot of us don't understand what you actually do, Dr. Ken, and a lot of us don't understand what the optometrist does.
Well, ophthalmologists, first of all, we are doctors. So we've qualified, we've done medical school, and then we spent another 6 to 7 years studying to be an eye doctor, which is an ophthalmologist. So we're qualified to do surgery on the eye and prescribe medications for the eye. Optometrists, on the other hand, do about 3 to 4 years of undergraduate study specifically on the eye, and they are trained to prescribe glasses, contact lenses, and really just sort of general eye care. But they're not licensed to prescribe any medications or perform any procedures on the eye. So I think that's the main distinction.
Okay. And when do we come and see you, and when do we see an optometrist?
Generally speaking, I would advise anybody with any sort of basic eye issue to see an optometrist first. Because sometimes it could be a spectacle issue. So and then if the optometrist can't fix your vision with glasses, then usually they refer the patient on.
When you say basic eye issue, you're talking about eyesight problems.
Yeah, I mean patients that can't read for near, or they have difficulty seeing far. Children, any child between 4 and 5 should have an eye check. And a local optometrist would probably be the most accessible person to see. Rather than going to a hospital or a clinic to see a eye doctor.
Okay. If you have a question for Dr. Ken, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We're talking about, you know, dubious treatments when it comes to your eye. And, you know, a lot of this stuff is sold online. There are grey areas when it comes to regulation, as Dr. Ken spoke about. A lot of claims flying around as far as what these products can actually do. How would we know if a product is licensed or not?
It's difficult because I've seen some of these packaging of these dubious products, and they claim to have a
FDA
MOH
approval.
License and all sorts of things, a halal certificate and things like that. So it's difficult. I think, first of all, a lot of these products are sold as a multi-level marketing sort of scheme. So there's a huge pressure for the seller to sell more products, and it's usually to their friends and family. So I think if you come across this, it's usually being pushed by people you know. And if you just do a quick search online, and then you'll be able to verify whether it's good or not. If you're not sure, I think it's always helpful to get an opinion from a doctor or an optometrist, you know, a professional dealing with the eye. They'll be able to advise better.
Okay. Yeah. We always know I'm the traditional carrot. Is there a relationship between carrots and our eyesight at all?
Carrot, the fruit, the vegetable.
The vegetable. I mean, take that for an example.
We talked many years ago about food for your eyes.
Yes.
Carrots are high in a compound called beta-carotene, and that's been shown to be very helpful in the prevention of a specific eye disease called macular degeneration. But again, too much carrots are bad for you. Mm-hmm. It increases your risk of lung cancer, especially if you're a smoker. So I think all things in moderation. And of course, there are many amazing stories in the past of people turning orange from just eating nothing but carrots.
Yes.
So a bit of balance, I think, is
okay.
Useful.
So say I see a supplement, a carrot supplement, which is good for your eyesight. What would you say about that?
I wouldn't say, like someone as fit and healthy as you, Mira, you would not require any supplements as long as you're leading a balanced lifestyle.
Huh. And then we all claim that we don't lead a balanced lifestyle.
It's quite simple. I mean, if you exercise weekly, eat your fruits and vegetables, eat some oily fish, you know, and generally speaking, not obese or overweight, I think you can be quite certain you are okay. Specific patients need supplements for the eye. These patients are generally elderly, and they already have a disease called macular degeneration. And we do prescribe supplements to stop them from getting worse. But for the vast majority of the population, supplements don't make any difference.
Okay, all right then. And besides the supplements and all of that, there are also claims or people who carry out cataract surgeries, which are laser, and you know they claim to be better than conventional surgery.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, cataract surgery has been around for many years. It's really the most common operation in the world done. So in America, they do about hundreds of thousands a year. And so basically, the long-standing way, the last 10 to 15 years, we've been doing a procedure called phacoemulsification, where you make a small cut in the eye, put an ultrasound probe in to dissolve the cataract, remove it safely, and then put an artificial lens back in the eye. And this takes about 10 to 15 minutes, and it's very quick and effective. In the last 10 years, the technology companies have developed a laser to replace the blade, to make the cut in the eye and also make a cut within the capsular bag to remove the cataract. And that was done because it was thought to be easier to do and automated and more precise. The problem really is when it comes to marketing these technology, it's expensive. Femtosecond laser on its own is easily 2 to 3 million ringgit. So you can imagine the amount of investment somebody has to do and marketing to get the payback on these machines. And so what upsets us is the inaccurate marketing made by these companies, claiming that it's quicker and faster and or safer. On the other hand, when in reality it's not, because it takes more time when you want to do a cataract operation with a femtosecond laser. And it's also not necessarily safer. Many studies have been done, and they've not shown that it is better than the current techniques that we're using.
Okay, but that does that depend on who's actually carrying it out?
Absolutely. I mean, like any procedure, you have to be trained to do it. Cataract surgery takes 5 to 6 years to learn. If you're comparing a trainee surgeon doing a traditional phaco operation versus an experienced surgeon who's doing a femtosecond laser cataract surgery, it's not comparing the same thing. But if you're comparing two experienced surgeons, you definitely... the phaco cataract surgery still is faster, cheaper, and very, very effective as well.
Okay, so let's talk about the claims made for this laser surgery. It's faster and it's safer because it doesn't use a surgical blade. Now, is that false?
Yes, because there's still a cut in the eye. You're using the laser to make a cut. And what they don't say, sometimes they use a blade because the laser cut is not all the way through. So you still have to open up the wound in the cornea to make the wound. So, and it's creating an unfounded fear of the blade because the blade that we use is a disposable blade that's sharp and has zero risk of infection. And it's faster to use the blade than the laser. So that's number one. Number two, the safety issue that it doesn't leak. Any wound in the eye can leak, even if you're using a blade or a laser. And at the end of the operation, I always check. If it's leaking, I'll just put a stitch on it to prevent infection.
Mm-hmm. So the claims of lesser complications?
The claims of lesser complications are not there because actually a big study done in Europe in 2016 comparing these two procedures, they had about 8,000 eyes, showed that the complication rate is actually slightly higher in the femtosecond laser group.
Okay.
So there are more issues. The eye intraocular pressure is actually higher when you do the procedure because they use a suction to suck the eyeball up, to hold it still while they do the laser. And during that period of time, the eye pressure can go very high.
And it's more precise because it replaces certain manual steps by the surgeon?
Yes, there's one step which is the capsulotomy, which is making a hole in the capsule to remove the cataract. That's definitely, it gives you a nice circle. But the problem with that is it can be a weaker circle because the laser has multiple perforations on the capsule. So there can be like postage stamp cuts in the eye. Whereas if you do it manually, it's a smooth round circle done.
Okay, so I'm assuming as the society, you are not really for laser surgery?
Well, it is FDA approved. This laser, we're not against it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with technology. It is definitely an approved treatment. What we want the public to be aware of is number one, it's more expensive. First of all, you're paying a lot more for it. Secondly, it's not necessarily better. I would say laser has a role, you know, for specific complicated cases, yes, but for the average cataract, for the vast majority of cases in Andy, what we're doing now is more than adequate.
Okay. Yeah. All right then. So got your so it is, but how do we have these conversations? Do we then, you know, you're convinced when somebody tells you about the laser surgery, yeah. then what, go back, find out from another ophthalmologist as to whether or not you should consider conventional surgery? All that is hard work.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is driven mainly by the commercial centers doing this procedure. So it's a very hard sell to the patients. Firstly, it's a negative thing to scare them, to say that blade is dangerous. It's thing. Secondly, you try and say that, you know, you're using laser, which is more supposed to be more modern. And finally, you tell them, oh, it's more accurate and things like that. So it can be very confusing okay. for the patient. So we get a lot, every time there's a big blitz by commercial centers promoting this procedure, the week after, a lot of my members, we get a whole surge of people inquiring about it and why. And we have to spend a lot of time explaining to them.
Okay, meaning issue. Your ophthalmologists, yes. The others, yes. Sort of calling in. But are you seeing casualties as a result? Or?
Complications there are. I don't think they're that high, but definitely there are. So in the past, in the first 2 years of femtosecond laser, there were many cases of what we call drop nucleus, where during the cataract operation, the whole lens would drop to the back of the eye because of the laser causing a gas bubble within the capsular bag. But I think through improvements and learning, this is much less now.
Okay, so what should we do? Should we be more critical when we're being presented this information?
Yeah, of course. This is the same thing that's happening all over the world.
Do some research before you actually go.
Yeah, and first of all, do you really need the cataract operation? A lot of the time, these patients are picked up in free eye screenings. So in a supermarket or in a public area, they might just say, oh, let's just go for an eye check. And these patients are completely fine. There's nothing wrong with them. And then the person screening them will say, oh, by the way, you've got a cataract. It's very serious. You should go and get it done. So then immediately they're like told they have something wrong with them mm-hmm. and they're being pressured to have the procedure done. So that's where a lot of the time these problems arise.
Okay. So then go to your ophthalmologist and get it checked out.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We are discussing dubious treatments or, you know, treatments which seem to be sold online, which, you know, are sometimes many claims attached to it. But, you know, I think my biggest concern here is how do we make that differentiation between what is actually genuine and what isn't? And who should we really be going to? Is the society open for us to call and check, Dr. Ken?
Well, the society is just, we don't offer any services, but the patients can go to our website, which is mso.org.my. There's a Find a Doctor tab there, so you can click on it and then you can look for the eye doctors near you and you can look for them and speak to them.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so if you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. In our Health and Living segment, Dr. Ken Fong, President of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. He's a consultant ophthalmologist as well. We are discussing some of the types of treatment that is being commercially or advertised to you, some of which, you know, have claims attached to which may not actually be the best for your eye conditions. Dr. Ken has gone through online how, you know, products are being sold for conditions like glaucoma, coma, for myopia, for cataracts, for an example, a lot of claims involved in it. So I think my thoughts were, how do we empower ourselves to make better decisions? Consulting an ophthalmologist is probably the best idea because they're the ones trained. Dr. Ken has also made the differentiation between an ophthalmologist and an optometrist. So if you do have eyesight issues like, you know, long distance reading, that kind of thing, get yourself checked out with an optometrist first before you go to an ophthalmologist. We have a question here from Izzat Rahim. Izzat is asking, what's the difference between or is there a difference between an ophthalmologist for children and adults?
Yes, we have some ophthalmologists who have done special training in pediatrics ophthalmology. So they've done an additional 1 or 2 years at eye diseases affecting children. And they generally tend to deal with more complicated cases affecting children. But all ophthalmologists can see children. All of us are trained to do a refraction on a child, how to examine a child. So we can diagnose. But if we find a problem like a squint or some other issue, we generally refer them to our colleagues who are better trained to deal with these pediatric problems.
Okay, so like it's a subspecialization.
Exactly. Like I'm subspecialty in retina.
Right.
So I focus a lot of my time dealing with retinal problems.
Sure. Another question. What's your opinion on the Bates method to strengthen your eyesight? From Chin Chuk Wang, he's asking.
The Bates method has been around for almost 100 years. The original Bates himself passed away in 1931.
Okay.
And so it's really a legend thing that's been carried on. And his original description doesn't apply anymore because in 1931, our knowledge of the eye was so basic that, and really there was no treatment available in those days for the eye. So people would try anything. The short answer is no, it doesn't work. All these eye exercises to relax accommodation, et cetera, it really doesn't really help. And a lot of the time, I think not many people do it anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Ahmad, you have a question for us? Hello, Ahmad, are you there? Hello? Okay, Ahmad, you got to call us back because your line is terribly faint. We're discussing treatments for your eye, the not-so-recommended ones or approved for that matter with Dr. Ken Fong, President of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmologists. He's very, very passionate about this because you seem to be seeing a lot of casualties as a result of these so-called dubious treatments, don't you?
Yeah, and it's really a shame, really, because I feel sorry for the patients. These products are not cheap. And it's essentially, I would say, in a short word, it's a con job. I mean, they're being cheated of their money and for things they don't really need. And it's a shame when then they abandon their normal treatments and they lose sight as a result, which is very sad.
Okay. Yeah. We went through some specifics just now, Dr. Fong. We spoke about the conventional surgery for cataracts versus the laser and some of the claims for that. Are there any others that you seem to see coming through besides these areas?
For current controversies in eye treatments, well, another controversy is floaters. Floaters are little wiggly things you might see in your eyes moving about. They're very, very common, mm-hmm. especially above the age of 50. So in the past, there have been people touting to do laser to break the floaters up. Again, there's not much evidence to show that it's better than... Because the vast majority of floaters are harmless. Most of us just get used to it. And for very, very bad floaters, the best is to remove it by a surgery called vitrectomy. But some doctors are offering what we call laser, YAC laser, to dissolve the floaters. But in fact, what it does is it makes a big floater into many little floaters.
Okay.
And these patients sometimes need multiple treatments and there can be complications as a result of that.
Okay. Yeah. Ahmad, you, Mrs. Wong, you have a question.
Yeah. Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, doctor. I want to ask, do public hospitals offer multifocal lens for cataract operation? Because my husband went and found out that they don't offer the multifocal lens, whereas in the private sector, they offer the multifocal lens. Yes. I mean, you have a choice of a normal lens and a multifocal lens.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mrs. Wong. Yeah.
That's a really good question. So when you do your cataract, you remove the cataract, you have a choice of what lens you want to put inside your eye, which is permanent. So there's two choices. The traditional is called a monofocal, where we fix your distance vision, but for near vision, you still need reading glasses. And more recently, they've got what we call multifocal lenses, which allows you to see near, far, without having to wear glasses. A lot of the time, what doctors don't explain to the patients is that these multifocal lenses may not be suitable for everybody. They have side effects. The most common side effect is night driving problems, where they get glare and halo. And also when it's dark, when it's under low light, these multifocal lenses don't work as well. So the patient still needs reading glasses. And the last point is these multifocal lenses cost more. So easily 3 times more expensive than a monofocal lens. Average price of a monofocal lens between 500 to 700 ringgit. A multifocal lens can cost between 2,000 to 3,000 ringgit. So that's the reason why in government hospitals, probably because it is a much more expensive thing, it's not commonly offered. Actually, some government hospitals do offer the multifocal lens, but the patient has to pay extra for the lens. the lens itself is considered a medical device, not a drug or a thing. So in the government sector, where I used to work anyway, the patients would have to buy the lens themselves out of pocket.
But you're saying it's no guarantee?
No guarantee the multifocal lens will work for near. Okay. I mean, if you need a very good, proper examination of the eye to be sure, and also a discussion of the patient. Some patients are not suitable. They are very particular. They need to be more adaptable to be able to adapt to the lens.
Okay. Yeah. All right then. Ahmad, you have a question.
Yeah. I would like to ask Dr. Ken.
Yes.
What is the risk of glaucoma as one gets older and older? I'm referring more on the senior citizens.
Okay.
And related to that is, I hear the solution is mostly on surgery. Is there anything else, a simpler way of addressing this problem?
Glaucoma, you're talking about?
Yeah,
okay. I'm talking about glaucoma. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's another great question. Glaucoma is very common. It's often called the silent killer or silent blinding disease, because it comes very slowly as you lose your field of vision. It's more common above the age of 45. And actually what's recommended is everybody above the age of 45 should have their eye pressure checked. Now, it's not as simple as checking your blood pressure, where you can just go to the pharmacy and buy a cuff and check your own blood pressure at home.
Yeah.
An eye pressure requires a very specialized device to touch your eyeball to have a figure on the eye pressure. So in response to his question, yes, the risk of glaucoma increases as you get older, which is why you should have an eye check once a year. Most optometrists can check your eye pressure for you. And if there's any problems there, if they feel the eye pressure is high, they'll refer you on to an eye doctor for further tests. The mainstay of treatment for glaucoma is drops. So it's harmless. You put a drop once or twice a day, but it's lifelong. Then if the drops don't work, they may have laser or surgery. Surgery is usually the last resort. It's actually getting less and less for glaucoma.
Okay, but then if you have a family history, what do you do then? Should you not be checking your eye pressure much earlier?
Yeah, you should. You should. In fact, there are home devices you can use to check your own eye pressure, but they cost about 10,000 ringgit each. So it's really not really an affordable option at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. Question here from Dr. Jagjit. He says, I'm a plastic surgeon. My practice is ridiculed with over-the-counter stem cell treatments, which absolutely have no scientific justification. And he's wondering if the ophthalmology community is encountering the same issue. Stem cells.
Yeah, another great question from Dr. Jagjit. Stem cells are hot topic all over the world. You'll be surprised to hear that just last month, there was a first world successful stem cell treatment for retinal disease in the eye, where the surgeons actually injected derived stem cells grown in a laboratory underneath the retina, and they showed a visual benefit.
The patient's own stem cells?
No, it's from RPE, so it's from the laboratory.
Okay.
Yeah. And but it's a very, very technical operation that you have to be very specific where you inject the stem cells. On the other hand, last year in Florida, there were about 17 patients that went blind after some stem cell clinics injected fat and spun fat and whatever cells and injected straight into the eyeball. It caused severe inflammation and blindness. So uncontrolled use of these stem cells can lead to blindness. So for the eye specifically at the moment, we don't have this problem because many, many doctors or practitioners find it very difficult to access the eye. No one would dare put a needle into your eye.
Of course, besides the ophthalmologist. So if somebody does recommend stem cells, what do we do?
I would be very wary about
it. Okay, all right then. We're discussing dubious treatments when it comes to your eyes and various conditions of the eye. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-1000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. When we come back, I have a question from Cheng, and we also have James on the line, and we have a question from Facebook. Send your questions through Facebook and we will answer them on air as well. So that's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodi. If you have just joined us, it's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Ken Fong, consultant ophthalmologist in the studio with us. He's also president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology. He feels very strongly about dubious treatments which are being advertised or being offered to you for your eyesight issues. And that's why he's here to answer some of your questions. If you want to, if you have burning questions about procedures that didn't go well or, medication that are not working, well, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. Tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. James, you have a question. James?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hello, doctor.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, my name's James. No, I'm just 70 years old.
Okay.
I just want to know, on a lot of places you find these reading glasses.
Yes.
Which are quite cheap, $2, $5, but they seem to be perfect for reading. Is it okay to use them instead of the normal prescription glasses if they suit your eyesight?
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much, James. All right. Dr. Ken?
Yeah, I think it's perfectly fine to use them because for reading glasses, they're a very set formula. It's either plus 1.5, plus 2, or plus 2.5. And they're cheap to produce. And I often tell my patients, especially after cataract surgery, to just get a cheap pair of reading glasses as a temporary thing. And then after their vision has stabilized, after about a month, then we would then check the prescription again and maybe tie it up a bit more. So it's okay. It's safe to use. They're widely available in shops and pharmacies and things like that.
Okay, for long-term use?
Long-term use, many patients go fine with them. But if you find that you're getting headache with your reading glasses, then you should definitely see an optometrist to double-check the power.
Okay. Yeah. Question via Facebook. My dad did a cataract surgery in the government hospital. The doctor said it was ultrasound and not laser. He did not experience clearer vision, unlike my mother when she did it in a private hospital and it was laser. Is it because of ultrasound is not as good as laser? What are your thoughts on that?
Actually, it's a misconception because when they advertise it as laser, they still use the ultrasound to remove the cataract. So both procedures have the ultrasound procedure. It's just that the laser is used to make a cut in the eye. So I think it's a misconception. And secondly, poor vision after cataract surgery has many causes. Most of the time, I would say the patients that have surgery in the government sector tend to be worse because their cataracts are a lot more mature. Or they may have other comorbidities like diabetes or cornea problems or retinal problems that may impair recovery to vision after surgery. And usually, the patients that go to private hospitals tend to be able to afford the treatment and tend to be, generally speaking, in better health. So it's hard to generalize, but I think without examining the patient, but I think you can't really blame the ultrasound for poor vision after cataract, because both the laser and the phaco is ultrasound, and then when they advertise it as femtosecond laser cataract surgery, they also use the phaco ultrasound.
Okay, so when you say phaco, you're talking about the phaco emulsification cataract surgery?
Yes, that's ultrasound.
That is what we call ultrasound as well?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
All right then. If you have a question for us, give us a call, number 03-77-109-000. Via WhatsApp, Cheng is asking, my uncle is 83 years of age, she has glaucoma and turned clinically blind. He can only see shadows, but now he seems to have lazy eyes when we are talking to him. Is that a common occurrence?
Yeah, if your eye has become blind, it tends to wander off and do its own thing. So you might notice some patients when they've lost their sight, the eye just turns off to the side because it's no longer receiving any information, so the nerve sort of switches off. So that can happen as well.
Okay, so it's quite normal then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Question for glaucoma, should I be extra careful if my parent has glaucoma? Should adults who face computers and mobile phones take supplements like lutein as prevention for eye diseases or degeneration? Or just regular servings of carrot or goji berries, that's sufficient?
Again, no, I would not recommend supplements for healthy people who generally have a healthy diet. The average office person sitting in front of a computer, looking at their handphones or devices every day, should take an hour. For every hour, they should get up and rest their eyes for 10 minutes. So get up, have a cup of coffee, and rest your eyes. That's the best way to to deal with it and not supplements.
Okay. You know, we also have steroid eye drops that are prescribed by some non-ophthalmologists for conditions like conjunctivitis or even eye discomfort. And now, how do we manage that and make sure that we're not, you know, overusing the eye drops?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up. This is actually a very topical issue. My society has just written to the Ministry of Health to try and reclassify steroid eye drops from being over-the-counter, which means patients can buy without prescription, to becoming a prescription-only medication. The reason being is it's being abused by the patients because they don't want to see the doctor. They have itchy eyes, so they go to the pharmacy and just buy a steroid eye drop, and they use it for prolonged periods of time. And then we have a lot of the eye doctors have seen patients who've lost vision because of the complications of steroid eye drops. 50% of patients will get glaucoma.
Wow.
If you use steroid eye drops for more than 2 months. Glaucoma means the pressure goes up and you go blind. The vast majority of these patients are young because they haven't got time to go and seek medical advice. So they just go to the pharmacy and buy these drops off the counter. So we're trying to get it reclassified such that it can only be on a doctor's prescription. Ideally, an ophthalmologist's prescription. But we have been educating our GP colleagues to be more careful when they prescribe steroid eye drops as well.
Why is it? I mean, it's been such a long time. I mean, has it not been brought to the attention of the ministry to reclassify?
Yes, this is a 10-year-old issue. In 2005, the Society of Ophthalmology already raised this issue, and so we're just trying our best to make it happen.
Okay.
So from my colleagues in the government sector, the Ministry of Health, they are doing their own survey now internally to get some facts and figures to present to the pharmaceutical division of the Ministry of Health. But the society, the MSO itself, has written a letter on this.
Okay. Question from Roy. He's asking, Dr. Fong, my father had a cataract surgery 2 years ago. Now his vision is poor and the doctor now says he needs a cornea transplant. Could you please advise, and where do they go?
Yeah. So, one of the rare complications of cataract surgery is that the cornea, which is the front of your eye, becomes cloudy. And if that happens, you need a cornea transplant, which is basically a new piece of tissue from donor eyes. In the government sector, the place to go is Sungai Buloh Hospital. That's the designated national center for corneal transplants.
Okay.
And I think, generally speaking, the results are very good.
Okay, but so, are there corneas available, though?
Of course, of course. You can choose. You can buy it from Sri Lanka. You can
but
buy it from
that
America.
Is really advisable?
Yeah, because the immediately after the donor has passed away, the corneas are harvested and put into a solution which preserves the cornea, and then it's then transported all over the world for use.
Okay.
And so, and our techniques of corneal transplantation have improved so much. The results are very good.
Okay. Because we always hear of, you know, organ donation and how you shouldn't be going or getting stuff from abroad. But I'm sure there's some checks and balances.
There is no local source of these. We have a big problem in this country. We
of
can't
course.
Get
we
organs.
We don't have enough donors, yeah.
We have none. So our local eye banks have a big problem. And, you know, it's very difficult to get them.
Okay. Yeah. Another question here. If a doctor has been delisted or struck off the membership due to unethical practices like scaring patients, going blind due to floaters, what do you do? And if you go for a second opinion and it proves otherwise, what do you do? I mean, do we just let them, you know?
So if you have specific complaints about doctors, you have to refer the doctor to the Malaysian Medical Council, which is the MMC. That's the governing body. My society is just a professional society which represents the profession and also the patient's interest. But for legal issues like this, the Malaysian Medical Council is a place to go.
MMC.
Not MMA, which is another doctor's association, but MMC.
MMC is the regulator?
MMC is the regulator.
Yep.
Yeah.
The MMA is just the association.
Yeah, all doctors have to be licensed by the MMC to practice in this country.
Okay. Another question, do digital lenses help and what's the purpose? There are digital lenses?
No, I don't think that. I'm not sure what I mean by digital lenses.
Okay, neither do I. Yeah. Never heard of it before. Okay, last one. If some of these products are not registered as medicines or even medical devices, as you said, some of them are come under supplements, food, that kind of thing, then who regulates them?
Yeah, there's a grey area. So the supplements, I would estimate all these supplements industry is a multi-billion ringgit industry in our country. You know, there's a huge margin, profit margin to be made. And many of my patients, you know, you find that they're taking a supplement for the eye, supplement for the heart, supplement for the knee, supplement for general well-being, and if you look at the contents, they're all exactly the same. So we're actually overdosing on supplements. So I think it's not necessary.
But then again, you know, there's always this argument that you can overdose on supplements, it's okay, it'll just get washed out.
No, that's absolutely wrong. There's a very good study shown that high doses of antioxidants actually makes you not only increase your risk of cancer, but if you do get cancer, if you go for chemotherapy, your cancer is more resistant to the chemotherapy. So I think there's actually a big fear now that we are poisoning ourselves with too much supplements.
Too much of supplements.
Yeah, and the most recent study, omega-3, fish oil, they did a huge study in America as a treatment for dry eyes. They had no effect. They found that there was no difference between placebo and fish oil for dry eyes.
Okay, speaking of dry eyes, we have a question from Lei Ping. She's asking, could you please advise what is the best way of treating dry eyes? Is it just eye drops?
There's many ways to treat dry eyes. Firstly, look at your environment. If you're working in an office, don't sit underneath the aircon. If you wear contact lenses, you may consider stopping not wearing contact lenses. And yes, the mainstay is artificial tears, but there are many causes of dry eyes. And one of the most common causes is what we call blepharitis or meibomian gland disease, where your eyelids are inflamed and oily. And the treatment for that is actually lid hygiene, where you use a warm towel and clean your eyelids twice a day. It's like brushing your teeth and getting all the sticky gunk away from the eyelids, and that will help improve your symptoms a lot.
Okay, eye drops?
Yeah, and if you really have dry eyes, yes, dry eye drops do help, and there's many, many types available.
Okay. We have Charles on the line. You have a question, Charles.
Yes, Dr. Fong, hello.
Yes, Hi. Go ahead.
Hello. You can hear me, right?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, we were talking about the cataract operation earlier.
Yes.
Now, I have done that, and I have used monofocals for both eyes. Now, I was wondering, could I have choose one eye for long distance and one for short distance? Is that possible? Would my brain be able to adjust to that?
Okay. Yeah.
That's my first question. There's one more question.
Sure.
Talking about eye lotion. I have this dry eye and red eye thing for a while, and I've been given this type of eye lotion by the ophthalmologist. And then I met a friend, an old friend, who said that he has been using this, what you call, bamboo salt solution, something from Korea, that helps him with his red eye and his dry eye. Now, what do you think of this kind of solution?
Okay, thank you, Charles. Thanks very much.
Okay, so the first question is a good question. That's called monovision. So one way around this near vision problem after using monofocal lenses, cataract surgery, is to put one eye to see far and make the second eye a bit short-sighted so you can read near. The problem with that is you lose your 3D perception. So you cannot watch Avatar in 3D. You can't watch Star Wars in 3D because the power is not balanced between both eyes. Secondly, you can't thread a needle or do complex tasks. Thirdly, you can't do reverse parking because if you look over your eye with your short-sighted eye, you can't see. So it's not an ideal solution. And some patients complain of headaches because of the imbalance. It's very hard to tell who would benefit from mono vision. So we don't recommend it unless the patient is already doing it. Some patients are short-sighted, they undercorrect one eye so they can deliberately see near with an eye. For those patients, I think they are used to it, they'll be helpful. For the vast majority of patients, it's best to be left the same power in both eyes. You get the best quality vision.
What about the eye lotion?
Yeah, the eye lotion is back to the same dubious treatment. If you get drops from Korea, Japan, or China, or wherever, claiming it's this and that, you know, we don't know what's really inside. Most of the time, it's just saline solution. But the key ingredient in artificial teardrops is something called hyaluronic, which is found in many of the normal eye drops we use. And that seems to be the best treatment for dry eyes.
Okay. Your message on dubious treatments?
Yeah, I think, as you know, our public is now better educated. They have access to online, Dr. Google, social media. And they should always double-check anything that's advised to them. And especially if you don't have any eye problems, you really don't need to take any supplements, and don't be pressured into having any procedures that you don't need.
Okay, and can we contact the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology?
You can go to our website. Again, it's mso.org.my. There's a whole section on facts for the patients, and there's a Find a Doctor tab there where you can find out our members and inquire more. But we don't give specific medical advice from the society.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mira.
Dr. Ken Fong, consultant ophthalmologist and president of the Malaysian Society of Ophthalmology, talking to us about dubious treatments when it comes to your eyes. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.